And now I have the pleasure of bringing on my good buddy, Tracy Neal. He's the founder and president of I Sell Beer. How you doing, Tracy?
Good, Mark. Thanks for having me today.
I'm glad you are here. We are brothers in the Entrepreneurs Organization. You are an entrepreneur that has built this extremely successful business, and it's all around beer, one of my favorite topics. Give us an overview. What's your business all about?
So we're a software analytics company, and we're an app and a portal, and we provide our services to sales reps of beer, wine, and spirits distributors around the country. Especially here in Sacramento, but around the country. We're headquartered here in Sacramento with employees in North Carolina, Alabama, and Texas.
So your customer is the beer distributor and the employee at the beer distributor. Give us a sense as to why they need your stuff. What do they do with your software?
Yeah, so the sales reps are going around on routes every day selling beer to retailers. A retailer could be convenience store, liquor store, grocery store, maybe in some on-premise accounts like a bar, restaurant, or a golf course. And they have their iPad where they're taking their orders and they're looking at par values for every different brand and every different SKU. Whether it's beer, wine, or spirits. I'll probably just mostly talk in the beer terms.
Right.
Our software helps them sell more beer by helping them track the accountability for the incremental activities that they get paid for, most notably displays. So in the off-premise trade channel, like a grocery store, a liquor store, or a C-store, the thing that sells the most beer is a display. And a display is a stack of cases outside of the beer aisle with a special price on it, some special promotional materials, and that creates the impulse purchase by the customer. In the beer industry, it's illegal to pay for those.
I can't be Budweiser or Anheuser-Busch or BevMo, whoever it is, whatever the name of their company is. Get them on the end cap and write them a cash check. I can't do that.
Correct. You cannot do that in the alcohol industry. So the way that happens is there's a lot of what we call PFP or MBOs or priorities and objectives. PFP stands for pay for performance. And a lot of the dollars will roll down through the sales reps in incremental amounts, for example, like a dollar per case. So as much Corona as you might be able to get on display at Safeway, a sales rep might earn a dollar a case for getting those displays.
Gotcha.
The challenge there comes in the validation that it was done, because if you put up 50 cases of Corona at an end cap in Safeway, it's going to start selling immediately, and it's such a quick point in time that to give you an idea of what we did, we digitized the old Polaroid process. Mm-hmm. So if you go back 25 years ago, when I started in the beer industry, I was handed a Polaroid, and I was told, hey, kid, every time you get a picture of a display, take a picture. Every time you get a tap handle, take a picture. And every time you get a new placement, take a picture.
That's your proof to get paid your spiff or your bonus.
Okay. Yep. So our app allows a sales rep to do that very quickly. It rolls it up in a cloud where there's a database. And from that database, a beer distributor and all their middle managers and supervisors can tell where certain brands are and, more importantly, where they're not, so they can close those gaps on the last few days of the week.
Wow, I can definitely see that being a huge help in that industry. But let's talk about your journey. I mean, you just didn't show up one day and have this idea. Talk to us about your entrepreneurial journey.
So I worked for Coors Brewing Company starting in the early 90s, right out of college. I went to Chico State.
Nice.
And got a job working for Coors. And over about a 17-year career, I had a couple hiatuses where I went and did some other things. But mostly over a 17-year career, I was with Coors, which became Molson Coors and then Miller Coors. And over this period of time, I managed beer distributors for mostly Northern California and Hawaii. And throughout that time, the technology was advancing and putting the Polaroid process out of the business. But the technology that was replacing it, I got very frustrated with. It didn't seem like it was helping us sell more beer. It seemed like it was solving an IT problem, but it wasn't solving a sales problem. Part of my territory was the Silicon Valley, and I had a lot of college friends from Chico as well as from UC Davis, where I did some study as well.
You didn't study beer in Chico State, did you?
No.
Okay, because I know some kids that do.
Yeah, as well as Davis, right? There's some beer schools in Davis. I actually have a much greater passion for selling beer than I do drinking beer or brewing beer. Okay. I'm really passionate about the selling of beer.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're good. Yeah. What I was saying is that, what was I saying?
You were saying where you discovered, you have your buddies in the Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay, yeah. So I had some friends in the Silicon Valley, so it made it very easy for me to say, this is around 2009, 2010, where there was an app for that.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
I said, can we build an app for this to help sales reps sell more beer? And we came up with an app and launched it out there. Our very first customer was on May 1st, 2013, here in Sacramento. It was Mark Stein Beverage. Wow. In Sacramento.
Nice account, I'm sure.
Very, very good partners of ours, still customers of ours. A gentleman over there named Jason Whitworth took a chance on us, and Jim Janis, and their portfolio consists of, can I say beer brands? Am I going to step on any?
I think it's fine.
Okay, so Anheuser-Busch, right? Oh. Bud Light, Corona, Sam Adams, Sierra Nevada. A lot of big brands.
What would you say to those guys that took a chance on you? That first customer sometimes is tough to get. That's what gets you the confidence level. What would you say to the Mark Stein guys?
Just a giant thank you. Just a giant thank you. Probably a little bitty I'm sorry, right? Because everything that I promised, maybe it didn't work exactly the way it was supposed to work. Mm. When you're coming out of the gate with a new product, especially in technology, I sold the vision, and the product mostly did what it was supposed to do. But also just a big thank you for sticking with us, because over time we got to where we wanted to get to. But as with any product, when you sell it to your first customer, it doesn't necessarily do everything that it should do right out of the gate. And they've been very patient with us to grow, as have many other customers around the country.
So let's talk about that journey. We were talking earlier with Carl, and he had had some failure. I mean, any big lessons along the way so far since 2013?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest lessons was that I didn't need money in the first year to get started, and that's really weird to say.
You did not need money.
I did not need money. I did not have money. I did not need money. I had been coached on using other people's money to get started, and even as it happened, I didn't realize it was happening. But the way I got started was I partnered with a software developer, and they actually gave me about 6 to 8 months credit on the development that I did. And again, it's only in hindsight that I look back and say, how lucky was I to have such a partner?
That seems uncommon.
That
how did
allowed
you pull that
me
off?
To do that.
How did you get somebody to do the work for you using other people's money? I like that OPM, right? So
they were starting off as well. The developers were new as well. They had been traditional enterprise SAP developers. They were moving into the mobile space. And so they were taking a chance on me. I was taking a chance on them. And we just kind of got partnered up to where I really didn't spend a lot of money to get my, my prototype out there.
Is there a lesson in there that we can take away? I mean, what, anything that was, I don't know, repeatable there
for
somebody else?
The lesson is just don't ever give up. Just don't quit. You know, the stick-to-itiveness of not quitting was part of our secret sauce in the early days. Because there's probably many milestones, and there are probably many moments where this company should not have continued, whether it was a financial lapse or a technological lapse, or maybe we lost a big customer, which we've had our share of losing customers. We don't like it. It's not part of our business plan, but occasionally you lose a customer. But you learn from that. You know, you learn what to do right and why it happened. And maybe you had a blind spot or you weren't paying attention to a particular need that you had promised or expected to deliver on.
Well, it's interesting. We're talking about image earlier, like what kind of car you drive. And, you know, I have guys come in here for investment and they pull up in a fancy car and they want to get investment, but yet they're paying themselves a lot of money in salary. I mean, thinking about those early years, right? Obviously now you've had this, the success, but in those early years, I mean, What was your image? I mean, did you pull up in the old beater car to grab the Mark Stein account?
I was afraid we were going to talk about my car.
What kind of car do you drive now?
I drive a 2005 Yukon GMC.
Okay.
About 160,000 miles on it.
Yeah, a guy that can drive whatever he
wants,
right?
It's paid for.
Right?
It's my paid for car.
Right, well, why? Okay, why? Because, I mean, some people are really caught up in their image. They're really caught up in how other people are going to perceive their success level. I mean, why drive the older car? You know, I like that it's paid for.
You know, in my entrepreneurial, I would like to drive a nice car. I'd like to drive a new car. But in my entrepreneurial journey, the checkbox of buying Tracy a new car, we're not there yet.
Okay.
You know, I have a wonderful wife who's been extremely patient with me. I have four wonderful sons. And in the checkbox of the needs, the things that we're taking care of, you know, there's debt and there's school and there's vacations and there are other things. And frankly, an old car is something I can kind of tolerate. It's not, we're not there yet.
some people say that having an old car might, I see this in real estate, right? We own some real estate companies. Some people think that by having a really nice car, you might get more business. I guess it wouldn't affect a business.
No,
like
in my business, it wouldn't affect most. So beer distributors are far and few between. There's only two or three per major city, and we cover the whole United States. So when my team and I travel, we traditionally either Uber somewhere, or in a rare case that it's very far from the airport, we'll use a rental car. So,
you know, it's interesting. You and I are in the Entrepreneurs Organization together. You're on the board. You're the chair of the learning group. And I think entrepreneurship is about, you know, there's a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of pain. There's sometimes some real upside. But, I mean, one of the things is we're able to be real with one another. It's one of those organizations where, I mean, you're here, I think, showing a vulnerability about, you know, what kind of car you drive and why, and those are the kind of things that you can't talk about a lot of times with everybody. But when you're talking to your entrepreneurial brothers, here we are on the radio, you're talking to your entrepreneurial brothers and sisters, it's like you can share your wildest dreams, the things that concern you. I mean, that's my view of what EO is. But like, what do you get out of EO? What's EO mean to you?
Oh, I love being in EO. I joined EO about 2.5 years ago. And the thing for me on EO is it eliminated a big part of the loneliness I had on the entrepreneurial journey. Having had almost a 20-year career in corporate America, and not just corporate America, but in beer. Beer's an extremely social industry.
Yeah.
You know, a good third of my job was taking people out to lunch and dinner and golf tournaments and baseball games and stuff like that. I mean, I was very social and I did a lot of things. And when I jumped into the entrepreneurial track by myself, not only is it lonely to be an entrepreneur, but in my particular case, none of my employees lived in California. So I went from being very social to being in this, you know, office all by myself. And then to make it even worse, I turned myself into a technical product owner where I was working with developers overseas day and night for the first 3 or 4 years to get the product up. So I was very lonely. And when I discovered EO, I discovered it through Matt Dahlstrom, who's one of our speakers on Thursday night, as well as Lance Loveday.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a big aha, like, wow, there's other guys I can talk to. There's people that have been through the struggles, but more or less just the peerness of people who are going through the same struggles, and knowing that some of my major screw-ups or hiccups or challenges weren't unique and could be shared and could be learned from, but also some of the big celebratory things too. You know, sometimes, especially in the early days, you know, I've got a picture of me holding my very first check on my doorstep, and my wife took the picture of it.
Yeah.
You know, and in EO, I didn't have EO at that point in time to share that with, so I shared that moment with my wife. But you can do that in EO as well, and they get it. You know, even if your check is, you know, a $6,000 check, which is what I think my first check was. It was about $6,000. That's not retirement money. But if you're an entrepreneur, you can celebrate that. You can high five, and you could high five it with somebody who does $50 million a year, and they know and appreciate where you're coming because they were there once too.
Yeah. Well, we also we have some great events too. I mean, there's this brotherhood and sisterhood that exists within EO, and some of these celebrations really are around learning opportunities as well. We get together and bond as entrepreneurs. But we can learn too, right? It's educational.
Yeah.
You're talking about events. We have one Thursday, and we've got another one on February 5th where you're bringing in some big-time speakers that are known around the country. You're in charge of putting that all together. I mean, talk to us about that for a second. Like, what is the educational opportunity for somebody who's in the Entrepreneurs Organization?
I think it's just priceless, and I'm privileged to have that role of being the learning chair this year, where it's my job to get feedback from the other members and find out, you know, what's cutting edge out there. And we usually do it in the form of speakers, bringing in speakers in an evening event where we might have anywhere from 40 to 60 of us, and we might bring another 20 or 30 key executives or potential prospects who are interested in EO, and really just talking about things that are important to entrepreneurs from a learning perspective. You know, we've had a couple of finance people, which is a broad range, you know, whether it's accounting or financial planning. We've got somebody coming in this Thursday that's going to talk about Matt Dahlstrom's the author of Bloom, and his book is all about creating ownership amongst the employees that work for you as an entrepreneur, and that's going to be exciting. We've got Dan McGaw coming in also on Thursday. He's the godfather of marketing tech stack. He used to work for Kissmetrics, and now he's with Amazing Corps, And in fact, I just had breakfast with him downtown in Sacramento this morning. So he's excited to be here. And then on February 5th, like you mentioned, we have Paul Adams, who's going to come in and talk about the financial myths of being an entrepreneur, right? I mean, the idea is, oh, I'm going to run my own business. I'm going to just pull cash out of the drawer whenever I want and live happily ever after. And he's
going to work like that.
No, it doesn't always work like that. But he's going to, Paul Adams is going to talk about the financial myths of being an entrepreneur. Yeah. And then I'm really excited. We've got Cal Fussman. And if you haven't heard of Cal Fussman, or if our listeners haven't, check out his podcast. He's a writer for Esquire, New York Times, GQ. He's interviewed everybody on the planet that is, you know, one of the top 500 people that you've heard of. He's coming here to Sacramento to talk to us on February 5th.
The Entrepreneurs Organization. Good little commercial there for our brothers, for our organization. As the president, you know, it's my job to help grow membership a little bit. It's starting to happen. We're starting to get EO known finally. It's like the best secret in Sacramento, in my opinion. Okay, closing thoughts, Tracy. We're talking to the entrepreneurs out there in the region. Closing thoughts from a guy who's actually been there, done that, built something in the process of building something very special for his family.
Just a big thank you to all my customers. I mean, I know they're not all going to listen to this radio show as they're scattered across the country unless we become syndicated.
Well, we're going to give you a copy of this. You can email it out to them.
Yeah, so a big thank you to all my customers, to my employees that have also taken a chance. You know, that's another big deal is that when you're hiring someone from a corporate perspective, you're selling the corporate vision. And it's usually, you know, when I worked for Miller Coors, it's a pretty established corporate vision to come sell beer for a 150-year-old company. But when you're a startup, you've got to sell the vision for something that is very young and, you know, your employees that take a chance on you and believe that you're going to make payroll and that the vision that you've got, you can actually put together with the resources that you have and that the customers are going to stick with you. So just a big thank you. A lot of gratitude to everyone that's allowed me to do what I've done. And then, you know, to kind of summarize those that are out there taking a chance, I would just say just go for it. I mean, go fast, go hard. You know, as Carl said, fail fast and fail forward. Ship ugly is a term that's used in the software world. Mm-hmm. Ship ugly means finish your software and get it out to the customers. Even if it's ugly, just get it out and continue doing more and more iterations. So
I love it.
Yeah.
Tracy Neal, ship ugly. I'm going to steal that. We're going to make that a Markism. He is the learning chair for the Entrepreneurs Organization. My brother, he's the president of I Sell Beer. Thanks for coming on the show, Tracy.
Thank you, Mark.
Wide awake, the fever burns, sweat it out.